Kippur, why is Kol Nidre the opening of the holiest day of the year? Question number one. Question number two, and I intend to answer the three questions. Number two, there's something called Inuyim, things that we paint ourselves on Yom Kippur. We don't eat, we don't drink. What is this not wearing shoes on Yom Kippur? There's a lot of people in this audience, and many boys that I know, that are much more comfortable in slippers or in canvas sneakers than they are in shoes. So why is not wearing shoes one of the inuyim on Yom Kippur? It's not avelus. We know an oval doesn't wear shoes. Yom Kippur is not a day of avelus. So that's Tisha B'Av. Why do we have this halacha specifically on Yom Kippur? Not on Shabbos and Tammuz, not on any other fast day of not wearing shoes. Sounds like a very small question, but it has a very big answer. And the third question, and the rabbi spoke about it tonight, is that in Musaf, right after we talk about the korbanot that were brought on Yom Kippur, the holiest of the holy, the Kohen Gadol going inside the Kodesh Kedushin, the holy of holies, and we talk about the Avodah, right after that, we talk about the 10 Haruge Malchus, the 10 Tzaddikim that were killed. What are they doing in Yom Kippur? That's Tisha B'Av. Yom Kippur is not a sad day. Yom Kippur is a holiday, it's a Yom Tov. What is the Asurei Haruge Malchus doing in Musaf? And if you have to say on Yom Kippur, why right after the Korbanos? So the reason I'm going to answer the first question first, Kol Nidre. The whole Yom Kippur, and we spoke about this last year, and I'm not allowed to ask you to do this year again, so I didn't ask you last year, the greatness of a Tainit Dibur, of starting Yom Kippur from the beginning to the end and not uttering a word except for tefillah, which is very hard, of course, for the women who have children. Not to utter a word of Holy Yom Kippur. And there are some girls that did it last year that came to me this year, Baruch Hashem, and made shidduchim. These are in Wallace, we know you weren't allowed to tell us, but you told us what without telling us, which is like the way you usually tell us. And we didn't talk Holy Yom Kippur, and Baruch Hashem, we found all types of issues. Because a person's mouth is the weapon, is the tool that we use from the first minute of Yom Kippur until the end of Yom Kippur. And therefore the opening of Yom Kippur is Kol Nidre. And therefore we say right after Kol Nidre, Vayomer Hashem, and Hashem says, Salachti Kivorecha. I forgave you Kivorecha. Because of what you said. And therefore, to get forgiven on Yom Kippur, we will be forgiven by what we said. What does that mean? I had a totally different shiur prepared until I went to Shabbos to my Rav Weinfeld, Shabbos Agad, Shabbos of Tshuva, Joshua. And he said the following. There's a mission of Piriyamas that said, Mahavidan as Kala Adam Lechashkos. We must judge every person, every Jew, every person, Lechashkos favorably. And it's very hard to understand. You see somebody in a car on Shabbos, and they're driving, right? And you're a good Jew, and you say, oh, must be his wife's giving birth, and they're going to the hospital. I mean, you all do that, right? Or it must be a Hatzalah member. Or that person doesn't know what Shabbos. He thinks it's Sunday. He woke up. He, you know, sometimes I'm sure that someone forgot. Or they're not religious, so they don't know. So very nice. So you're very cute, and this car went by, and you said, "Oh Hashem, he's not being Machal Shabbos. His wife is pregnant." No problem. There's no woman in the car. But you came up with the story. Now, how does that affect anything? Hashem knows if that person is being Mechal Shabbos. So, by me speaking done Mechal Shabbos, by me judging another human being favorably, when I hear that another girl spoke about me, and I'm saying, she didn't really mean that, she really meant something else, Hashem knows what she meant. So what good does it do if I am Damachas Chus, another human being? And he said something amazing. We're going to learn a little Gemara tonight. There's a Gemara about the Kama that says the following amazing story. Tana Rabbana. A story about a girl, the daughter of someone named Yechunya, the digger, the ditch digger. He used to dig ditches and fill them up with water so the Jews going to the other regal would have something to drink. And he did this for free. Well, all he did all day was dig cisterns, holes in the ground, so that the Jews who were going would have something to drink. What happened? Nafla, Yechunya, his daughter, fell into one of the holes, and he died to help all the Jews. And she was drowning. So they came to Chanina ben Yosef, the great rabbi, Chanina ben Yosef. Amalehem, they said to him, help us, this girl is drowning. Amalehem shalom, everything will be okay. They came back, they said, she's under the water, she's still drowning. Amalehem shalom, don't worry. And then they came back a third time, and they said, also, she just came out of the water, and she's alive. So they went over to this girl, and they said to her, how did you get out of this well? How did you climb out of this well? And she said, Zatha Shalachel of Nizmali, there was a sheep, a male sheep that came, the Zakin Echad, and an elderly man leading it, and they took me out. And then of course she explained that it was Yitzchak, and it was his father Avram, and since Avram Avinu was the father of Chesed, and this man did all this Chesed, that he actually went and saved them. And then the Taisus says that actually Chanina ben Dosa, which we're going to understand, Chanina ben Dosa ended up going into the well, sort of like a malach, and got around. So they said to Chanina ben Dosa, not the actor! You're a prophet, we can't hear you, you said, don't worry, then you said, don't worry, and then she walked out. How did you know that she wouldn't drown? And he said, no, I am not a prophet. Elok, now listen carefully to this tomorrow. Elokach Omarti, because the following is what I said. Dabla Shalaisa Tzadik Mitztarabo, the actual thing that this Tzadik was busy digging these by these holes for the Jews? How could it happen that Yikoshev Azara, that his own daughter could drown in the well that he's doing chesed for the Jews? And therefore I knew that when a person does chesed, it can't happen. Oh, Rav Acha! What are you talking about? Acha Pikei! A few years later, Mace didn't know about someone. The same man who dug these wells and his daughter was saved, his son died of thirst. Frank asked Christ, what's going on over here? The Gemara just said that Chanina Mendoza said that the thing you do for Jews, nothing can happen to your children. And then the Gemara said that a few years later, his son died. So Christ answered that in the well he dug can't happen like a daughter with God. But the water, that's a separate thing. And therefore his son could die in the water. The Shikimu Kubetz, that's one of the great Shikimu Kubetz asked Aaron, that's not an answer. I don't accept that answer. What kind of answer is that? And he said the following. He said that when the daughter fell into the well, Chanina Mendoza stood out of his mouth, Hashem, how could you drown a girl in the well that her father died? And therefore, even though she deserves to die for whatever reason, because it came out of his mouth, in Shemayim, they accepted it and they saved her. So the Shikim Agubet says, but when his son was dying of thirst, there was nobody around. So nothing came out of nobody tying to Hashem. This time, how could you do such a thing if the man dug wells in their foot? What the Shikim Agubetz answers. We learn from this something very scary. And it's brought down that there's a machlokes, an argument in the Gemara, and God said in Shemayim that this Tzoraas was tahar, was pure, and the other rabbis in Shemayim argued with God and said it isn't, And Hashem said, I will go according to Rabbi Nachmani. Rabbi Nachmani passed it that it's good. The Rambam passed it isn't good. The Kesef Mishnah says, how can the Rambam passed it against God? God passed it. So the writer asked him, how could you pass it against Hashem? Hashem says it's good. How can you come along and say it's not good? And he answered, Lo Bashamayim. I'm sure you many learned this. God can't pass in halacha on this book. Benjamin Shalmaila, Yeshiva Shalmaila with Rabbi Akiva and Moshe Rabbeinu with Rabbi Netanyahu, they can't pass the halacha for us in this world. And therefore, if anyone in this room judges another Jew favorably, before Shemayim judges them unfavorably, Shemayim has to go with your judgment. So if there's a person in a car on Shabbos, and you're down with Maskus, that person doesn't know better, then in Shemayim, they can't pass in on Shabbos. And when someone talks Lashon Hara about you, and you figure out a way in your head to be down with Maskus, that wasn't Lashon Hara, and you took it wrong, and you didn't mean it, in Shemayim, it wasn't Lashon Hara. So that means that everyone in this room has the power to be done another Jew and to save her for the din that's going to happen on Yom Kippur and Shemayim. Because if you die and you judge her first for credit, they can't judge her anymore for that. Wow, what a power we will hold! Says the Mishnah, have a yon call on the chaskus. Become a dayan, become a judge, judge another Jew, no matter what they're doing, for the good. Be careful, because if you judge another Jew for the bad, Shemayim can't judge him for good. Do you understand? When you judge another Jew, that she's a robber and she's a stealer and I don't like her and she did this and she did that, Hashem can't judge her this close. Because whatever judge in this world, even if Shemayim goes against it, now Lachi is like this one. What an amazing power we will hold. Big up the Chavero to come to Yom Kippur and to forgive our children. And our children to forgive us, and to forgive our teachers, and teachers to forgive children. Because if that's the judgment call you make before Yom Kippur, then they can't judge it differently in Shemayim. Chanina ben Yosef judged that even though this girl deserves to die, you can't do it, Hashem. Therefore, she lived. But there was no one there to judge this little boy for good. Therefore, he died. How careful we have to be at Mechanchen as teachers and principals. How careful we have to be as parents and children not to judge each other for the bad. Because if we judge each other for the bad, Shemayim can't change it. But if we judge each other for the good, Shemayim won't change it. And there's many, many, many different stories. On the Gemara, but we see that the judgment of this world, whether it's Rosh Chodesh, whatever it is, has more power than the judgment of God. So therefore, we say, Kol Nidrei, all my promises and all the things I said, I put in the book, all those words. I have the power of words. I'm coming to Kippur with the power of words. So I'm going to use my power of words. Every one of us. And I'm going to go through all the people that judge this year for bad. And I'm going to make a new judgment. And I'm going to say, this one didn't mean it. And my mother didn't mean this. And my daughter didn't mean this. And my teacher didn't mean this. And I thought she stole from me, but she didn't steal from me, Hashem. And we're going to judge each other for good. And that way we're going to talk about it. And then I first brought away your Hashem. So lachmi kivorecha. We're all going to say it tonight in Yom Kippur. I'm going to forgive them because of your word. Because you judge them for good. I can only forgive them, keep on record. According say about that? That's how you open up Yom Kippur. That's what the Adam L'chabayim. Yom Kippur is a very, very holy day, and I know it's very, very late. It's a very, very holy day. It's a day where we are neshama. We're not guf. We're separated from our guf. We can say, Baruch Shem, Kavod, Malchus, Elyon, Vaed, just like the Malachim. We stand without shoes. We're not eating. We're like Moshe Rabbeinu. We didn't need to eat. He didn't need to drink. Some of us are not even sleeping. Who talks to Hashem on Yom Kippur? We speak, we daven, but this judgment that we have on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, did anyone here stand? And if you did, don't tell me, because we'll have all kinds of stories about it. Did anyone stand in Shemayim by the din? Who stands in Shemayim by the din? We don't go up to Shemayim by the din. Who's up here? So I want to tell you an amazing story. There was a young prince. In those days, they used to marry princes and princesses for the government. It was a young prince, pretty wild guy. And one day his father called the room and said, listen, there's a princess from a different country, and you're going to, tomorrow, you're going to meet her, and tomorrow night we're having a wedding. It's an arranged wedding. This guy didn't want an arranged wedding, but what could he do? He was the prince. That night, he meets the princess. She's a very beautiful girl, but he's interested because he's being forced. And he marries her. And he turns to her right after the wedding, after the chuppah, after the wedding, and says, so listen to me. I don't like you. I don't know you. I'm only married to you so that our two governments are together. I am not interested in you. But you are the princess, now that you marry me. There's a room on the other side of the castle. I don't want to ever see you again. And she begins to cry. She says, but you don't even know me. He says, I know, but I was forced to marry, I'm not interested. And he sends her to the other side of the castle, never to see her again. And his father dies, and he becomes the king, and now he can do what he wants, and he decides he's going to get married a second time. And he goes out, and he finds someone from his own choice, Bechiras Libo, and he marries her. And he lives with her, he's married to her for 30 years, not such a good marriage. He's a wild guy. And now, he's older, in the 60s, end of the 60s, 70s, whatever he's up to. And he decides, she's an old lady, I don't need her anymore. I'm going to go find myself a young girl. He goes out, he meets a 19-year-old girl. There's only about 55 years between them. She's like, he's the king. And she marries him. And all of a sudden, he feels so young. I'm sure you've seen these guys driving, you know, 70-year-old guys, convertibles, sports cars, a little ponytail in the back, and they think they're 25 years old. And you're like, what's he doing in that car? I'm supposed to be in that car, like, you know. He felt young, a 19-year-old girl who started going out, he started going to parties, she's on his arm, he's walking around, look what I got, my cars. And she's all suave, and she's all glamour, and she's buying all these beautiful clothing. And then he gets very sick. He's only married to her for a year. He gets very sick and he's on his deathbed. He's on his deathbed and he's dying. And he calls for the young queen. She walks in. She's not 20. He says, I've got to ask you something. He says, you know, I married you a year ago. I'm in love with you. You're like everything I always wanted. And I'm dying. And I don't have much time left. Could you do me a favor? Could you lay down next to me and take these two pills? Those are suicide pills, and we're going to die together. Bliss. Heavenly. She looks at him, she says, you fool! You old, smelly, grizzly old man! You think I married you because I love you? I married you because you're the king, and I wanted your castle. And I wanted your money, and I'm praying you should shut up. And he looks at me, but you said all those nice things, and you said all those sweet things, and you bought me that big cake on my birthday. She goes, you're a fool, old man. There's nothing worse than a foolish old man. And he says, Rahman, okay. Maybe not her, but my wife that I married all these years. Let me call for her. And he calls her in. She comes into the room. And he says, hi. And she goes, how can I help you? Why aren't you busy with your 19-year-old or 20-year-old? And he goes, listen, forget about that. It was silly. I made a mistake. I'm sorry. Us guys, we say that a lot. I'm really, really sorry. I'm dying. And would you do me a favor? We're married already. A long time. After 30. Would you take these two pills and just lay down next to me and die with me? She looks at him. She says, you know, until this little young one showed up, it wasn't so bad. But I'm not dying with you. But I'll tell you what I will do. Because I love you so much, and we had all these years of marriage, you could go to heaven peacefully. I'm not going to marry anyone else. He says, that doesn't help me. She says, I'm really sorry. She walks out of the room. And the man is now going to die all by himself. They knock on the door. Who is it? An old, frail voice. Who? He tells the servant, open the door. And in walks a very old, thin, in a wedding gown that is street and dirty and ripped. Her hair caked like it hasn't been washed in 30, 40 years. And standing in front of him, is the princess that he married all those years ago that he put in the corner of the castle. And he says to her, my dear, she said, I heard that you're dying. And without you, I have nothing. There's no life for me without you. And therefore, if you're dying, I will lay in the bed next to you, and I will take those two pills, and I will die. She says, where you been? She said, I have been watching you all these years from the day I set my eyes on you. I loved you. And I followed you around the castle. And I stayed out of your way. I know that you remarried twice. But I watched you, hoping that one day you'd come to my door and you'd remember me. But you didn't. I forgive you. And now I want to go with you to heaven. And this foolish old king began to cry. He said, what a fool am I! The one that really loved me all these years! I left you in a room without food, without water, without a shower, without clothing, while I ran after all these women who don't even care about me and try. What a wasted life I've had. What a marshal, says the Dumbaran kid. When a person is born into this world, he's forced. The neshama and guf are forced to be together. No choice. And the guf, all of us look at the neshama and say, I didn't ask for you. I don't want any part of you. Away. I got stuff to do. I got to go to school. I got to play ball. I got to make money. I gotta gather things. I gotta learn different subjects that are really important in getting my degree. And we get so busy. And that neshama that was forced on us when we were born gets put into a little corner. And it waits in each one of us. Come turn to me for 5 minutes. Say hello. Bring me something to eat. Talk to me. No, we're busy. In the Chiras Liba. I love what I chose to do in life, not what I was forced to do. And then as we get older, we believe that things that we gather, money and properties and things that we gather, those are our true friends, and we work very hard and we save very hard and we invest very hard and we give up our lives for money and houses and cars and whatever it is that we need. And then when it comes to the I'm going to your kids. I'm going to your investment broker. I'm going to your lawyer. Money? I don't stay with you. You're a fool that you spend all that time, even when you're older, trying to make money. I'm not going with you. And then we turn to our families. Baruch Hashem, 50 years, 60 years with our family, children, grandchildren, wives, husbands. And we turn to them and say, hey, it's been, yeah, I did spend a lot of time trying to make money, and it didn't give me the attention maybe that I should have. And some of our kids, you know, I went to college, I'm very busy, mom, sorry, I can't help you, I'm just very, very busy. But it wasn't such a terrible relationship, you know. So come with me! Family doesn't go with you when you leave this world. It was good. It was great. You're a father. You're not going to get another father. You're going to get another brother like you. You're always going to be memorized. We're going to have pictures of you. We're going to put a brachas on a Sefer Torah. There's going to be a lot of Eli Nishmas, Zeh Nishmas. But we're not going with you! And there on our bed in the last minute comes in something we don't even recognize. It's thin. It's broken. Our neshama. And the neshama says, I can't stay here without the goof. I've been watching you your whole life from the second you were born. And I should put that neshama in you. I've been following you to work, hoping you stay coming up the hill. I will follow you. Maybe you can give us chesedim. I was watching you every minute. Just give me some attention. I'll go with you for the next world. And the goof says, Leivay, my whole life I'm running after the young 19-year-old, and I'm running after the family, I'm running after everything. But the one thing that Hashem gave me that is me, which is my neshama, I paid no attention to. The din b'chesed that we all give on Rosh Hashanah and Kippur girls is our neshama goes to Shemayim. Our neshama stands in front of Hashem. We have 3 days left. Monday, Tuesday. 2 days left. 2 days left.
3 days to go to the room across the palace! To visit our neshama that's been sitting here for so long! While you're on Facebook! And while you're on your cell phone! And while you're busy with everything else! Sitting in that corner starving!
It's 3 days before that neshama is going to stand in front of Hashem. Dress it up. Give it to eat. Give it to drink. Let it stand before Hashem, not ignored, but very well taken care of. That's what Yom Kippur is about. We have 3 days. Usually when I say I want to end, you know I don't. But there's a story that I saw in the Shabbos that it says if you just listen to the story, it will change your neshama. And the story is very deep. And we don't have to understand the whole deep stuff. Mashiach is very close. And like the rabbi said, we don't give dates, but he's very close. What happens when Mashiach comes? The Shekhinah comes back to this world to be with us. And the story is told as follows. That there was a king who had a daughter. And one day a prince was invited to that palace, and he met this daughter of the king, and he fell very much in love with her. And the next morning he went to speak with her, and she was gone. She was kidnapped, and she was gone. The king was going crazy, and the prince said, King, you have nothing to worry about. Give me a servant, give me a horse, and I will find the princess. And as the story is written, he traveled for 2 years on all the main roads and he could not find her. And then he saw a shvil. He saw a side road. And he took the side road and he came to a very beautiful palace. And he walked into the palace and there was a king sitting on a throne. It was magnificent. It had everything. And he sat in the corner and he waited. And all of a sudden the princess came to sit on the throne next to this king. And he recognized king that he had met. And he went over to her and he said, "Your father's looking for you. I'm here to bring you home." And she said, "This is a very bad king and a very bad place. You need to wait for a year, pray for me for a year, and on the last day of the year, fast. And meet me in the garden, and we'll escape together." And he waited a year, and he prayed for her, and he prayed for her, and he prayed for her. And the final day, he came to the garden, and he was fasting. And there was an apple tree, a beautiful apple tree. And he didn't know if she wanted to fast to the end of the day, or just fast a little. And if he had to hurry, gave in, and he took the apple, and he bit into it. And when he bit into the apple, he fell asleep. And I'm saying this story very fast because it's late. And he woke up, and the Mishnah, the servant, was sitting next to him, and he said to the servant, "Where's the princess?" And he said, "You fool, you ate from the apple, you didn't fast. She came to get you, and you were sleeping. She tried to wake you up, and you were sleeping." He said, "Where is she?" He said, "She's still in the palace." "But it's 3 years you were sleeping." And he runs back to the palace, and he says to the princess, I'm sorry, I can't believe I did this to you. I couldn't save you. What do I do now?" And she said, "Another year, pray for me. And on the last day of the year, you don't have to fast. But whatever you do, don't drink wine. And he did it again. He spent the whole year and he prayed for her. And it was the last day he came to the garden. And there was a stream flowing through the garden. A stream of water, but it was red. And he said to himself, "It can't be wine. Wine doesn't flow in a stream. Must be water colored red." And he was thirsty. So he bent down and he drank it. And of course it was wine. And he fell asleep again. He woke up 70 years later. When he woke up, he said to the servant, "Where am I?" And the servant said, "You fool. She came again to the garden, and you were sleeping again, and she tried to wake you up, and you were sleeping, but she wrote you a note." And he opened the note, and the note said, "I am no longer here. I am on a faraway mountain, a mountain made of gold and diamond. Look for me there. I tried to wake you up, but you did not wake. And now he had this fever, he was crazy. I have to find her." And that story says, the story that's brought down in Kabbalah, he went and he started looking and he went all over and he looked and he looked and he looked. And he went to the Midbar and he met a man and he said to the man, "Is there such a place, a mountain made of gold and diamonds?" And the man said, "What are you, a fool? There is no such place. But I am the master of all the chayas, all the animals. I'll ask them." And they gathered all the animals and they said, "Is there such a place, a palace, on a mountain made out of diamonds and gold?" And all the animals said, "Foolish man, there is no such place." But the man said, "But I have a friend, and he's the master of the birds. Go ask him." And he went to the master of the birds, and he gathered all the birds, and he said, "Is there such a place?" And the birds all said, "Foolish man, there is no such place." And then finally, he met a man who was the master of the spirits, the ruachs, and he asked him, "Is there such a place in the world, a mountain of gold and diamonds?" And all the masters of Ruchim of all the spirits said, "All you spirits, come and tell me, is there such a place?" And they all came and said, "There is." And then a minute later, Ruach came and said, "I'm sorry that I'm late." And the master of the spirit said, "Why are you late?" And he said, "I just came from the queen of the mountain of diamonds and gold." And the priest started to jump in such a place. "Couldn't you take me to such a place?" And the ruach said, the spirit said, "I am a spirit, I can take you anywhere." And he took him to this mountain of diamonds and gold. And there she was. And at the end of the story, he waited his year. He fasted. He didn't drink from the wine. And he saved her and he brought her home. What is this story and what does this have to do with Yom Kippur? This story is a story about Chai Yisrael and the Shekhinah, Hashem's Shekhinah. We are the prince and the Shekhinah is the princess. And through our Averas, the princess was taken away in the first place, Hamikdash. We made a mistake, it was Taiva, it was three Averas, it was Gilei Aroyos, Shvichas Damim. And I told the Zola, it was Taiva, it was clear, you can't eat, and we ate from the apple, and we fell asleep, and we lost the Shekhinah. And then, again, the Shechina said, okay, you don't have to fast, but just don't drink from the wine. And that's our generation, everybody. Because the clarity is something we only know. And I'm sorry that I have to go here, but I always go here. But what was his mistake by the river? A river is water. And even if it's red, it's water. It's not wine because it's a river. A computer is kosher. Because a computer can't be unkosher. Because we need it in our business. And we need it in our education. So it has to be kosher. And a cell phone has to be kosher. Because how can we communicate without a cell phone? So the sun here in the river, the wine, it's not so clear. So we go into the computer for the right reasons. And we find out that this river has wine. And it puts Klal Yisrael to sleep. We go into the cell phone for the right reasons. And we end up sending text messages to the wrong people. And we fall asleep for a very long time. But the queen leaves a message that I'm in the mountain of silver and gold. I'm in the mountain. I'm still around. I still miss you. Search for me. Find me. And the last time before Mashiach, you'll have clarity. And nobody will think that the water is water, that we'll be able to see clearly. The problem that we're in right now, everybody, is that we're in a world that has no clarity. This Yom Kippur, we have the strength of being a Ruach, of being a spirit. We're out of our humanness. We're at a level of spirituality. We can fly to that mountain and bring the Shekhinah back with us. We just have to try. And that's why we don't wear shoes. And I'm apologizing for the pictures that I'm going to show. And I'm going to end with this thought, and it's very important. The reason that Surah Elulei Malchus are read on Musaf on Yom Kippur is because we are still paying for that Avera. It says that from the beginning, from when they sold Yosef to Mashiach comes, on Yom Kippur, no matter what we do, the Slatan comes in front of Hashem, and he says, they sold their brother. They have to pay for it. And therefore, the Ashura Elulei Malchus, we specifically say on Yom Kippur, to say to Hashem, don't listen to him, we paid for it already. It's paid for. We gave up our 10 best tzaddikim. Not only that, if you look at the pasuk when they sold Yosef, they did three things. One, they took off his kesayas, they ripped off his kesayas pasim, a very important for us in chinuch and for parents. And it says that he was naked when they threw him in the bar. And the mafarshim asked, what do you mean he was naked? They took off his jacket. He had a shirt. And the mafarshim say they were in such a zeal to prove that it felt all right. And when they ripped off his jacket, they ripped off his shirt. How careful we have to be when, even when we're right and the child is wrong, take the jacket. When they do wrong, take it off softly so we don't rip off the stuff that covers his soul and his heart. These brothers ripped off his kisaras and they dipped it in blood. And because of that, we should say, we have the blood libel. All these years that we suffered from blood libel, and now they're trying to start it again. Because we went to Yaakov Avinu and said, the blood of the ram is the blood of your son. We made up a story that the blood of an animal is the blood of a human. So now the guy is making a story that the wine that we use, which is wine, is the blood of a human. We just have it in. How we do the Gamma Kadero, we pay forever. So the blood wine is from the Chiras Yosef, the ripping the clothes. Purim was from selling of Yosef. We see that after Achashverosh and Haman decided to destroy the whole Jewish nation, they sat down to a sukunda. If you look in the pasuk, and when the brothers decided to throw him into the bar, they sat down to a sukunda. And the last thing is something that we can do to change our judgment day in Yom Kippur. I don't collect for organizations, but I want to tell you something very sad. The last thing that we did when we sold Yosef is that we used the money that we got to buy shoes. They didn't know what to do with the money. So they used the money. They said, we can't use the money for clothing because it's from an Avera, from selling our brother. So they went ahead and each one bought himself a pair of shoes. And it said, in the Pia that we're going to read on Yom Kippur, it's very scary. We don't read this on the Shabbat. And this Russia Marusha who killed the 10 Tzadikim, he gathered them and he did the following. Gavad Lev Gedolim, he became arrogant against the Tzadikim, the Tzivo, the Lamo, his Platero, the Olim, and he said, fill up my palace with shoes. Why? And he turned to the Tzadikim and he said, you know why I'm filling up with shoes? Because the Orchas, the Shme'elis, the Charuhu, you sold your brother to the Arabs. You sold him for a pair of shoes. And therefore the Asurim, who gave Malchus, died because he sold Yosef HaTzadik. And how do we punish the blood libels we know? Haman we know. How does Christ go punish his shoes? I again apologize to all the Holocaust survivors that are in the room. But those that are not Holocaust survivors need to see this. Yehuda, if you could please put on the screen, how will we punish his shoes? These are the piles of shoes from the Holocaust. Why did the Nazis want our shoes? Every pair of shoes is one of our grandfathers, great-grandfathers, children that would have been grandfathers. Millions of shoes! Millions of shoes! For 10 pairs of shoes! For selling guys in about Tzadik. So how can you wear shoes on Yom Kippur? No shoes on Yom Kippur to remind my chair. I sold. And I thought to myself, when I learned this, how are we going to correct this? There's an organization called the Samchelev. They give out shoes for Jewish children who can't afford to buy shoes. A pair of shoes is $25. They are now giving out shoes for 10 years. They have given out 300,000 pair of shoes to Jewish children. But there's 700,000 missing! Because they took a million pairs of shoes from our children! And I decided tonight to get up, and I don't do this, and we need to stand this Yom Kippur, and we need to end this Holocaust. And one of these little shoes was Chassidish kids. And the last time he gave out shoes, he got his new shoes. He was so excited. He left his old shoes. These are his old shoes. How long was he wearing shoes like this? And this organization is Sam Chelev. And they spend a lot of time on these children's shoes. Replace that shoe with these shoes. And I said in my heart, even though I don't do this, I'm going to ask everybody to come up with $25 on your way out, in the envelope, wherever, and spend $25 with William Kipper to buy a pair of shoes. So that when the Sultan comes in front of Hashem and says, shoes! They sold them for shoes! Gabriel Michalkin says, yeah, but look at all the kids that now bought shoes. A bracha to everyone in this room. And I'm not in love with it, I'm going to tell you a fact. There will be another pile of shoes, girls! And it will be much higher than that pile! And many more shoes than those shoes! that's going to be a pile of sheaves to Shemayim. I got a bracha many years ago. I didn't understand until I prepared this shiur. And a great tzaddik, I'm a kohen, he said, my bracha to you is, and from now on, you should go barefoot. And I looked at this rug, and I said, barefoot in the base of Mikdash. Next year, Vina Malkeinu, you're all not going to be wearing shoes, because it's going to be in the chutzpah.